Blog Talk Radio.
Are you a fan of Movie Geeks United and wonder how you can show your support? Consider making a donation to help keep the show going strong. Donate as much or as little as you'd like. We've even made it possible for you to schedule recurring donations on a monthly basis. Help us keep providing the great thought-provoking content and filmmaker interviews you've come to love. Visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net to find out how you can become a Movie Geeks United supporter. Want to listen to the latest movie books, including this year's Oscar-nominated The Wolf of Wall Street? Movie Geeks United has teamed up with Audible.com, the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the Internet, to make you a movie insider. Choose the audio versions of your favorite books with a library of over 150,000 titles to choose from. You can purchase them individually, or for real savings, you can sign up for an Audible Listener Program, which gives you book credits each month for a low monthly fee. Download your choices and access them on your PC, burn them onto CDs, or upload them to iPods or other MP3 devices. It's quick, easy, fun, and affordable entertainment, and it's all yours if you go to audibletrial.com/moviegeeksunited. Okay, it's the Movie Geeks United. We are all here tonight. We're taping live. It's our Oscar post show. It's been a little over 24 hours since the Oscars started last night when we're taping this. And so I wanted to get everyone's fresh perspective on what the big evening was like for you guys. The highest rated Oscar telecast in the past 10 years. 43 million people.
That's
so it
a
did
lot.
Really well. Especially, I would be interested in seeing if people tuned in through the whole thing. I'm not quite sure how that works because I thought it kind of definitely lagged in energy in places. But let me get you guys' take on the overall ceremony, and then we'll get to the particulars.
Well, for me, I hate to be this person because I've always railed against the people who have criticized the show for being dull the day after, which I kind of a cliche, but sometimes it's true. And for me, this was a very dull show, and not because of the host, but because of the production and the writing and the direction of it. I just felt like it was very, very fatty, filled with a lot of dead space, you know. I thought that Ellen was charming and funny at first. But then, even though I thought she was warm all the way throughout the show, I felt like there just wasn't any kind of effort put into writing it. It almost seemed like it was being improvised, you know, especially with the stuff like the pizza stuff and everything, which I think was their effort to bring some life into the show that the Golden Globes have. But
yeah.
I just didn't think it worked, really. And I guess it doesn't work because of the theater and because of the importance of the event. Everybody's kind of pent up with anxiety in some way. So, but really, I thought like it was the direction and the writing of it that really fell short. I don't know. What did you guys think?
What did you think, Jerry?
Well, I mean, I think Ellen did a good job. When was the last time she hosted?
Just
7 years ago.
Okay, she did a good job. I mean, she did the best she could with what she's given, which is a very stale format. I also think I think Pharrell and Karen O saved the show in the first half because it was dreadfully going off the rails at some points. I think you guys are right, though, especially you, Jamie. Maybe the montages have to go. Maybe
yeah,
I thought these were the worst. Now, I have a question. I do have a question because for the actual Heroes montage, which was a ridiculous theme for the show, I really don't understand what that had to do with anything. But for the Heroes montage, they showed Henry Cavill's Superman. They did not show Christopher Reeve in that, did they?
I saw some Reeve in there, so that was
definitely
sure?
In there. Are you sure? Is it? Because I did
yes,
not.
It
I
was.
Saw a lot of Henry Cavill, and I thought not to really emphasize the other one. I thought was a real slap in the face. But I do think you could get rid of the montages. I thought you could have gotten rid of Bette Midler too, for that matter.
I didn't understand why they didn't have Bette Midler actually sing during the
why couldn't you
save time?
Why couldn't they keep the thing going? I mean, they gave it twice as much time, but they didn't. So there were a lot of names that they left off, like Dennis Farina and a few others. But why couldn't they keep it going while she was singing? Because honestly, we really didn't need to hear that song.
No, we didn't. I think there's a problem with. I do think the show needs to be shortened. I do. They don't know how to. I don't know what you know. I understand that Seth MacFarlane was offensive or whatever, but you're going to have to keep coming back to this and tinkering with this. I do think the show needs a drastic overhaul because it does run out of steam. At times, and it is dreadfully slow. There's no doubt about it.
One of the things I think they need to also look at, you know, other than cutting the, you know, first of all, the montages, you know, the montages were actually a lot better in the older days because even though they were extraneous, you know, and could easily be cut, they were a lot better when Chuck Workman was doing them. You
mm-hmm.
know, Chuck Workman is a, you know, is an Oscar winner himself.
Right.
Won an Oscar mm-hmm. for Precious Images, which was a collection of
one
clips,
of the best
you know.
Of those. One of the best
and,
of these. I mean.
Yeah, and so, but Chuck Workman is not doing these clip montages anymore, and those montages were just left you with no sense of wonder whatsoever.
No, I mean, I didn't get that at all.
Very, very, very little, you know, was gained from that. But
and they didn't even play one of the montages. They had planned one other hero montage for the female heroes, and they just didn't play it because they were running over.
You know, that just shows you, the females got cut. I mean, even though females did pretty well last night, but, you know, in the showing of the, in the show and everything. But
right.
One of the things that they also need to look at trying to cut is the sort of self-important bloviating about how great movies are, you know. I mean, theoretically, anybody who's watching the show already knows that movies are great and what they can do. They're great when they're great. And
well, that would
and,
bust that ego bubble right there.
But they need to
they
get
do
rid
need to
of
do
all
it.
That stuff. They don't need the stars up there giving a little, you know, rant, a soft little rant about how great movies are, because we already know that they're great when they're,
right,
when they're
right,
done
right,
correctly.
Right.
Well,
I will say that I always kind of say, you know, what are all these musical performances outside of the best song nominees? They're not necessary, but I mean, I say that, but a highlight from last year was Shirley Bassey, and I thought one of the highlights this year was Pink singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, even
that
though
that was very good. Surprisingly,
it was very surprising to me how the, you know, the Children of Garland were there, but they didn't sing.
That was a big shock. That was a big shock at first, but I thought Pink, I think you're absolutely right, Pink did an excellent job.
Maybe they're past their singing prime, and that's why they weren't. I was surprised at how that was trumped up as being an event, and then really all the event was them standing up in the audience, and that was it, you know. And there was that joke which some people found offensive with Liza Minnelli actually being a male impersonating Liza Minnelli. I actually thought that was kind of funny,
I didn't think that was offensive. Like, I thought it was a bunch of like false outrage about that joke. It wasn't really edgy. It's well known that she has a lot of men that do impersonations of her.
Right, exactly.
Unless you've been living in the dark ages, you'd know that.
I'm positive she took it in the correct way.
Yeah, I mean, these people, can I say something? We're forgetting these are entertainers. These are people in the entertainment business. They have to have been around this long. They have a thick skin, trust me. I mean, they really do. These people are used to rejection after rejection for a long time.
That's true. It is
false outrage. I mean, I agree with that.
But I did like the line about possibility number one, 12 Years a Slave wins Best Picture. Possibility number two, we're all racists.
That was about the edgiest joke in the whole show.
Yeah.
And then I really did think that her monologue was good. I mean, I got a few real good outburst laughs, especially with her joke with Jonah Hill. That was a seriously great joke.
Yeah, I think
and,
that was, I think
good
that
job.
Was very good, but I think that, I mean, when she went out into the audience, I think it was kind of aimless for a while, and then miraculously it kind of came together. I thought that with the selfie thing, I mean, at first it took forever. But then everybody got involved, and that was a fun little moment because she only intended to take a picture of her and Meryl Streep.
Right.
She didn't think that everyone else would run up there, and that's what made that moment great. But and then eventually the pizza thing, once you saw everybody, like, getting their paper plates.
Throwing
and getting
in money
pizza.
For it,
yeah. Yeah,
that was good.
I thought that
saved it really at times.
And what it did was it kept, I mean, because the Oscars are always so stuffy, and it actually brought some life to the audience. And I actually thought that the audience was more comfortable this year than they have in years past.
Certainly more than last year.
I think that Ellen made that so. And,
I think you're correct. I think you're absolutely right, Jamie. And I think if you've ever watched her show, I think she's the first person in a long time to really has a strong handle on what a daytime talk show is without it being boring, without it being – I mean, she brings a lot of spunk and energy to that. I mean,
it's positivity without preachiness. I mean, that's what
she's excellent at that. So I think – I wouldn't mind it if she came back in another couple of years to do this again.
The Pharrell Williams thing where he went up and he sang Happy, and he got the audience involved in that. And, you know, people actually stood up during a musical number and were, like, clapping their hands and stuff. I mean, so, and that came right at the top of the show. So it got off to a really good start.
Yes.
Then the energy of it just completely tanked, accentuated by somebody like Harrison Ford walking up, and he's never the life of a party. I mean, that guy, that guy is like no fun whatsoever. It's funny to me how every time Harrison Ford shows up in a public forum, that everyone thinks he's high. That's always the comment about Harrison Ford. He seems like he's high. That's right.
Well, this is a man who has a strange set of demands to make a movie. So, I mean, very strange set of demands to make a movie lately. So, it is weird though. 20 years ago, everyone would have been jumping out of it. You know, everyone was very excited about Harrison Ford. It seems like the last 10 years, like, oh, it's Harrison Ford. There is something. I would have, you know, in my childhood would have called him almost very iconic, and now it just seems like, oh, I hate to say it, but it has been almost. I mean, there's nothing, there's no energy when he walks out. I don't get that with him anymore, and I hate to say that. I never thought I would say that, but I just, it almost feels like, oh, it's Harrison Ford.
I thought Jim Carrey was funny in his, you know, it almost seemed like an extension when he came out, an extension of the opening monologue in a lot of respects, and even though he was presenting for the animated films, but I liked his, you know, LSD joke.
Yeah,
I was way off. I mean, that got a big laugh out of me. So I got some laughs in the first few minutes of it, but then, as you said, you know, it started getting into sort of the compartments of the show. Like, okay, so here's now where we have to do a montage, and here's now where we have to do a song, and before you know it, 81 minutes has passed, and only one major award has been given out,
I thought they'd get done on time. I really did think it looked like, well, hey, we're going to get done on time, and I realized, oh, God, we're not, huh?
I read somewhere today that it was the exact running time of last year's.
Oh, okay.
Which was still too long. And there also seemed to be a lot of kind of miscues with Ellen. Like I understand for comic effect when she came out in the Wizard of Oz costume that she was supposed to be running in a little bit late, but she did that a couple of other times. Like
a
she
few
missed
times.
To come out.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of flubs and stuff all the way through it, you know, just all sorts of pieces of dead air and you know, John Travolta mispronouncing the singer's name for Frozen and so forth.
He's not going to live that down anytime soon.
Oh gosh, that's great. They actually have a John Travolta name generator now. It's a
yes.
Website.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on. Let me see if I can find it. But it's amazing to me, like when something like this happens in the pop culture, how quickly innovative people online kind of jump on it and make their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes. we're gonna Travoltify your name, Dean. Are you ready? Because the thing is, Travolta, for those of you that didn't watch or don't remember, Travolta went up to announce the performance of the song from Frozen. The singer's name is Idina Menzel. He pronounced it Adele Dazeem.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was just like, "What did he just say?"
And you could tell. He knew that he was screwed when he got to pronouncing the name, so he just kind of buried his head and just rushed through it. Okay, Dean Treadway, we're going to Travoltify your name. If Travolta were to say your name, Dean Treadway, it would actually be Dan Taisler.
That's not bad, actually. I mean,
For Dean Treadway, that's great. Okay, Dean's phone was muted. I don't know how that happened. You there, Dean?
I got cut off for some reason.
Oh, okay. Did you hear what your Travolta name would be?
No, what is it?
Oh, your name would be Dan Treisler. if John Travolta pronounced it.
we should all be so lucky.
He's not going to live this down.
He's just not going to live this down this week.
I know. That's, you know, 43 million people in the U.S. watching, and the millions upon millions more, you know, all across the planet. So it's not a great time to flub. But
no, it's not. Not in this day
and age. Another thing I want to talk about is Kim Novak. I have two thoughts on this.
Mm-hmm.
One is that I think that the Academy, I know that TV ratings and all that stuff, and they want to go young, 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 but I really do think that they should involve classic Hollywood more in each,
right,
in each ceremony.
Absolutely.
So I was very happy that Kim Novak was there and Poirier. But of course, the viciousness started about her age.
Her
which
look.
Is 81.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and the Botox, I guess, yeah.
And some of it made me, like, some of it made me laugh. The one thing that did make me laugh was it was more about age. There were some jokes about being 81. And, you know, Ellen DeGeneres made fun of June Squibb for her age in the opening monologue. So, the stuff that is concerning is, and there's been a couple of articles written about this today that are really good, you know, to bad talk someone. I mean, this is an 81-year-old woman. She's kind of a recluse, and she's a recluse for a reason, because she prefers animals over people, because she knows how cruel people can be, as they've been to her throughout her career, and kind of controlling of how she looked and how they wanted to mold her even when she was younger. So it is kind of a sad thing that she gets on an international stage. She's got major history in the industry, and she's just brutally kind of attacked for it, and that's kind of disheartening.
Well, I think it also says something. You talk about age and all that, and this also goes, you know, I was kind of shocked to see Goldie Hawn, too, because Goldie Hawn was, you know, a couple of years ago went out in public, you know, this is a thing, and, you know, without makeup, without anything, and, you know, people were, like, ragging on her, and I thought she looked great, but a lot of people, like, were, you know, ragging on her. I feel bad if they feel that they have to do this with the plastic surgery or the Botox. I mean, but there is this, you know, this pressure. Everyone wants to look young. Everyone wants, but at the same time, it's jarring. But I mean, more. I'm glad that Kim Novak showed up. I mean, that you have to have these people show up, because without them, we would have no business. That's what I think. You have you unfortunately have a young generation that has no idea movies existed before 2004. So it's vital that you have people like Kim Novak and even Goldie Hawn. I never thought I'd see Goldie Hawn in a sense, but she hasn't been in a movie, I think, for like, what is it, 10, 12 years or something? You have to have these people who are such a vital part of our cinematic DNA be part of these events, or else no one's going to know who they are, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, the thing about, first of all, you know, this really speaks to, you know, people of a certain age, of a certain young age, not having any kind of idea about movie history. And so the show would actually be smart to, when there is somebody like that coming up, to maybe concentrate their clip package powers on doing a little 30-second clip package for each of those stars, just to sort of give a quick sort of education. And not just the clips, but also the titles of the movies and so forth at the bottom of the screen and so forth, so people know what the movies are. You can't just show the clip from Vertigo without showing Vertigo at the bottom. Yeah, so, I mean, with that, I do agree that they need to have those stars, you know, from past eras on the stage, you know, when they can. But it'd be a good idea to just use it as an opportunity for education for everybody, because if you look at those clip packages that they had for the heroes and so forth, you know, it's kind of a piece, it's kind of a hypocritical thing that they do, because they want people to appreciate film history, but yet when they do the clip package, you know, for heroes and so forth, there's absolutely no old movies in there. I mean, most of them are from the past 20 years, and
they have just like odd choices 40. In there too, like odd choices in there too, like Footloose. Like, what was Footloose doing in the?
Yeah, I know.
Movie? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a good point. That's a good point, Dean.
They
didn't
show.
You only had one black and white movie, you know. You had the only thing they showed was To Kill a Mockingbird and so forth. By the way, they need to add the titles to every one of those clips. Every one of those clips. They need to go ahead and add the titles at the bottom of the screen so people know what movies they are. But if they're just going to stick with 20-year movies from the past 20 years, then I guess they don't really need to do that.
It's a bad thing, though.
They don't need to include the montages anyway. And I think that everybody agrees with that. Like, if you go on any website, like, things that they need to do to improve the Oscars, every year they say, get rid of the montages. Get rid of them. They're time wasters. And this is one ceremony. Now, I will say the one thing that I was incredibly grateful for, speaking of taking up time, was that they did not play the winners off. Like, they let – and some of them obliterated a lot. But, you know, they still let them go. And like we said last night, those are really the only moments of spontaneity in a show like this. And that's why something like Lupita Nyong'o was so, like, joyous. And that was, like, a real crybaby moment for me watching that.
That was one of the great moments last night with her win and her speech. I loved that's something that the show did right, was that they did not play anybody off. I mean, nobody. So I think the only person that didn't get to say anything was Alfonso Cuarón when he won his editing award, but he knew he probably might be back up there again so he could say things
later. Right.
But I loved that there was none of that, and that everybody had to say their piece. And as far as that goes, you know, who had the most interesting thing, of course, was the Lopez's winning best song.
That was good.
Their little routine up there was very well thought out and brought some energy to the show, I think. And as far as the actors go, I'm fine with them going up there and saying, as long as it's not, you know, Greer Garson's 6 minutes or whatever, you know. As long as it's not that. I mean, I could stand 2 minutes of them being up there, 2 or 3 minutes. Even.
Especially Jared Leto. Jared Leto's was beautiful, I thought. I really thought, I mean, his was really heartfelt. I mean, really, I mean, even though all, like, four had gone through this a couple of times, I thought all of them, even McConaughey's thing, I thought was just, you know, as wet and as true detective-y as it sounded at times. It was good, though. And I thought, you know, I said this this morning, and I said it last night, this is a guy who's been, was written off essentially, and it must have felt really good to be up there, to have this ride this season. You were someone who only a couple of years ago people thought your career was dead. And all of a sudden, you are the cock of the walk here. And, you know, I think it must have been beautiful because there are people, I mean, his peers, you know, insulted him over the years. I mean,
think about
revenge.
Same thing goes with Jared Leto, too, to tell you the truth. I mean, like, he's somebody that people had generally written off, too. So, yeah, I mean, like, I was extremely happy about that. I was happy to see that no one booed Woody Allen's name. That was good, you know, when Kate Blanchett mentioned
it.
It was good that she did that. The speech portions of it were a highlight for me.
Exactly.
A lot of standing ovations last night, like a lot more than I thought would happen, though. That's nice.
You know, I did forget Anne Hathaway won last year, so when she came out, I was like, oh, yeah, she won last year. I forgot. Absolutely.
Well, what about the presenters? Because I think the highlight of the presenters might have been Bill Murray when he gave the shout-out to Harold Ramis. And that was very nice, and he was very funny too. But I read today.
Yeah, go ahead.
Where I mean they had feuded for you know a lot
they
of years.
They had.
They were on the out
after.
But
Groundhog Day.
But Bill Murray went to him on his deathbed, and they made up. So so they weren't on bad terms when he died. So that was touching.
That was a wonderful moment.
Yeah, it really was. But stuff like Will Smith announcing Best Picture, I mean, I guess the thought was that maybe 12 Years a Slave winning Best Picture, but and Will Smith is the highest grossing black actor of all time. Maybe that was the thinking of having Will Smith. I mean, I know he's a big actor, but people said that the irony wasn't lost on them that After Earth was one of the, if not the worst movie of last year, and he's announcing the best movie.
He and his son just the previous night had won
the Razzie.
Both individual Razzies and a collective Razzie together for them both. So they each, you know, him and Jaden both won one of those coveted awards.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, oh man, only in Hollywood can you win two Razzies in one night, and then the next night go out and give the Best Picture Oscar out. I thought that was amazing. But I don't begrudge Will Smith as being the last person coming out, because, you know, if they're trying to appeal to younger generations, for them, Will Smith is somebody who's been around now for 25 years. I mean, so throughout their entire lives, and even for some of them before they were even born. So
yeah.
If
they're trying to go for younger generations, then of viewers or something, then you don't go with somebody that's already had a 25-year career. You go with Zac Efron. What I'm saying,
I know.
What
no,
I'm saying
but
is
I mean,
best
like,
picture.
But you
best
want
picture
somebody
to,
with you want somebody with some kind of gravitas in the industry.
Yeah,
you know?
And I don't think he has it. So what my point is, best picture should be Hollywood royalty. Like
Warren Beatty or somebody.
Like just like you said last week, Dean, that needed to be Sidney Poitier. It should have been.
I wonder if they might have decided that maybe he was, because he was in pretty frail condition, and maybe he wasn't, because we don't want a repeat of what Betty Davis did, you know, back in the 80s, where she opened the Best Picture thing and it was like a minute before anybody found out what it was. But I mean, it would be better, make it, you know, memorable. But I don't know. I mean, I was fine with him being the last person out there.
I just figured it was box office. It was based on box office. You know, like, he is, like, one of the biggest box office draws globally.
Sure.
And that's what I was thinking. I wasn't really thinking because it was 12 Years a Slave or something, which I thought was great that everyone, you know, Brad Pitt finally gets his Oscar and everything. And
yeah, let's talk about the awards themselves. I mean, you have to, the awards themselves, on the basis of the awards themselves, you have to love a year where Spike Jonze wins one.
Mm-hmm.
Alfonso Cuarón wins one. Paolo Sorrentino wins one. Brad Pitt wins one. Emmanuel Lubezki wins
right.
one. And Steve McQueen wins one. I think that's exactly what we want the Oscars to be.
You know, in
and John Ridley. John Ridley,
past,
too.
Though, in years past, though, they really have spread the wealth more than this year.
Yes, they have.
And I don't know if that's just how it turned out those years, or if that was a conscious effort in those years to do that. But a lot of like big things shut out this year, like Wolf of Wall Street and like what's the
American
Hustle? Yeah. But I will tell you that I think it's the best I've ever done in my Oscar predictions. And because I missed two, so I got 22 out of 24, and I changed my mind last week about Best Picture and changed it to Gravity, because I thought Gravity would be a slight upset for Best Picture, but so I paid for that. But all in all, you know, it was kind of, the winners were very predictable to all of us.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they were. I mean, that's kind of what contributed a little bit to the, what I felt was a boring ceremony, was that the winners were predictable. I mean, when you get to the point where the only surprise in the whole winners roster is maybe best animated short and best editing, then you know that you've either that we as a culture have either overworked this thing, or that the new rise of Oscar blogging as being an actual profession has maybe taken some of the mystery out of all of it.
That's very true.
I mean, you have to, and plus, you know, you have to also, like, blame the fact that, you know, it's happening in March, and there's been, like we said in last night's show, there's been 15 other things going on there, so 15 other award shows.
Award shows leading up to it, yeah. Another thing, we talked about the Murray-Ramis feud that was over before he died. The other feud, apparently, is between John Ridley and Steve McQueen, because John Ridley, Steve McQueen was kind of wanting to be included with a screenplay credit.
Right.
And Ridley didn't want that. And so McQueen was ousted from a co-screenwriting credit, so he didn't pick up that award with Ridley. So if you notice, Stephen Queen was just joyous whenever Lupita won, and of course whenever he won Best Picture. But when John Ridley picked up the Best Screenplay, he was very, very stoic, and Ridley did not.
It was obvious. I mean, it was obvious he was walking down the aisle and didn't even, you know, say anything as he passed McQueen. So.
And yet he hugged.
He
hugged David O. Russell, but he just walked right past Steve McQueen.
Yeah, he just, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Ridley didn't thank Steve McQueen on the stage, and McQueen didn't thank Ridley when he was on the stage. So there's bad blood.
No
there.
Love lost. Love lost between those two.
All
that was very obvious, and that's kind of rare. That's a rare thing to happen. I can't remember anything like that ever happening at the Oscars, where I thought, oh man, something going on between these two people. They're not talking to each other. I've never experienced that. So that was something new, but not like a really great thing. Hey, listen, I wanted to also talk about, like, some of the direction in the show. This is weird. Okay, so I love the Moon Song, the thing that Karen O did and everything.
Right.
But the way they directed it, I mean, they started it, they did it all in one shot with the camera all the way back at the back
of the
auditorium, and then coming into them. And I was like, for such a short song, I mean, that song is less than 2 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And also for such an intimate song, why would you start all the way back and make your subjects look like ants for half of the song before we even get to see their faces? And I thought the same way too about the pink thing. Frankly, the direction of the, you know, over the rainbow piece, I thought, man, you got Pink on the show, and she looks like she's tiny on the screen, and you can't even see her. You know, it's like, I was like, who thought of this? You know, I mean, both of those songs are very intimate and very, very much depend on the faces. Look, you got stars up there. We'll see their faces. Why make them look like a tiny star in a constellation up there? But that was just one of the direction, you know, pieces that I thought, I don't know. I mean, like, for a show that's poured over and poured over by numerous people, how could they make a mistake like that? I just don't get it. And you know, and many of the mistakes that are made, you know, I just don't get it. I mean, I don't know what they're thinking. So, but I mean, I loved you two. I thought they were great on the show. And I loved all four of the song nominees, which is rare.
That is rare.
Like you know, usually there's one or two of them that you're like, I could have done without that or whatever. But all of them were done very, very tastefully and quite well. But they just needed to tweak it a little bit more, I think. You know.
So what was the highlight for you and what was the low light?
The highlight, I think, would be the one genuine surprise of Spike Jonze winning for her. I mean, that really, I was not expecting that at all. So I'd have to put that as definitely one of the highlights. The low light, God, I mean... That could be in a couple of places, but I would have to go with the, God, how do I say this, just some of them, like what we've been talking about, the montages just really felt, just get rid of, well, the Heroes one I just thought was really just almost pointless, even though that was the thing. Actually, the low light really is the theme, Heroes. They don't need to have themes anymore. I don't understand what the point was. Oh, our theme is Heroes, and it just seems almost tacked on, really. It's like, oh, we have to have a theme. No, you don't. You don't have to have a theme. That would be the one thing I – because you're just wondering, why is this important? What does this have to do with the show? And nothing. So I would really have to go with the whole theme thing really being the low light.
For me, it would be the highlight would be Lupita's speech. I think that's the one thing, because I just think she's wonderful and I just hope that she's somebody that gets a lot of parts, because I think she's really great and she's really appealing, and I'd like to see her in something different, you know, and I think she's absolutely, unbelievably gorgeous, and I, you know, her speech was just wonderful, and it was the emotional highlight for me, very early on. Low lights for me, I mean, you know, okay, so let me mention the. Let me mention the Oscar set. You know, we were talking about how we love the Oscar mm-hmm. sets and so forth mm-hmm. and everything. The first Oscar set with those plastic Oscars up there that were all empty reminded me of like Oscar-shaped condoms or whatever. You know, it was like,
they looked
the
like gummy bears.
Yeah, gummy bears or big condoms, gigantic condoms or whatever. But that was just bizarre. But I loved that one set that they came out with when the writing awards were being given out with De Niro and
that was
with
cool
with the typewriters. That was great. But for me, the low light was. Oh God, just the slowness of it. I mean, like I've never really felt the slowness as much as I did that last night. You know, I don't know if it's a change in me or if it's a change in the show or whatever it is, but I was just very impatient with the show just in general, okay, so definitely the low light, though, for me. Definitely. Here's definitely the low light. Bette Midler singing that song. Because it's not Bette Midler's fault. I like Bette Midler. I think she's a great singer and everything when she's singing a really good song. But I don't like that song. And I especially didn't like the way, I mean, they had to be true to the song's origin, so they had to make it sound like the 80s period piece that it was, but it just made me wince all the way through. And her doing the little flying motions of when it was all over and everything, I was like, oh, my God, please, I can't watch this. This is just – so that was the – that was it. But also the highlight for me, too, just awards-wise, is just, well, Judas the Slave winning, because it was a tough road for that movie. And I think people, because of that win, will go back to that movie, even if they've avoided it, and say, well, look, now it's time for me to watch this. And I think that's a really good thing. And
I think they will, too. And actually, the book
– it's going to be taught.
The book sales
went up in schools.
Okay. The book sales went up today, just after the Oscar win. So I'm sure if the book sales have gone up, then the movie sales will go up too, and they're re-releasing it wider in theaters actually too. So
yeah, they want to use it in schools. 12 Years a Slave, like they did with Schindler's List. There's a strong push right now to have it shown in schools. So
that should be done. Yes,
it has to be done. I mean, see, if you really want to get the brutality. I mean, this is the first movie I've ever seen that really creates a very uncomfortable, and rightfully so, a movie about, you know, slavery shouldn't be a pleasant experience. It shouldn't be something that makes you very uncomfortable. And there is talk that they want to get there. Friends of mine who are teachers definitely want to start using this as an education tool. So, more power to them.
And then you mentioned the screenplay set with all the typewriters and stuff. Somebody tweeted last night they were building on a quote that Robert De Niro had during that presentation of that award. And he said, "The mind of a writer can be a truly terrible thing. I should know. I was just in Grudge Match."
Well, yes. True.
And he brought it on himself.
My highlight was Lupita, and my low light were the montages. So I think that pretty much does it. I mean, just get rid of the montages, and that shaves off, you know, 12 to 15 minutes just right there. You know, and I don't know how else to do it, because you got 24 categories. You got to go through all of them. You got to give the people the time to speak. You know, you could get rid of, have them sing the In Memoriam song during the presentation. But they did the same thing last year, because they had Streisand singing specifically for Marvin Hamlisch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that worked, though. That worked and was great, you know, but... I don't know.
I also never liked that. I never liked, if you're having an In Memoriam segment, I never liked the idea of singling one person out and giving them something extra, like they did with John Hughes that year. No disrespect to John Hughes, but it does seem kind of disrespectful that you're honoring all the people that have died in the entertainment industry, but you single one out for a particular segment, and you can't avoid saying this is the most important of all of these, so we're paying honor to John Hughes is more important than any of the others because we're paying special attention to him. I mean, that's not
I think it's funny how like thorny this whole In Memoriam segment has become.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they've actually had to like have a committee now at the Oscars to like figure out who's going to be on there and so forth, and people get very angry when almost any actor is left off in the place of like people that we don't know, like executives or, you know, an editor like Jerry Hambling or something like that, you know.
Right.
But somebody like, you know, and then it gets silly too, because then people like lose perspective and they don't really know like the difference between a TV actor like, I don't know, like Farrah Fawcett or whatever. There were people who were mad that Farrah Fawcett was left off or Jack Klugman was left off. And I'm like, come on, man. You can't put all these people up there. You know, everybody that was famous, put them up there. You have to, you know, I mean, you're not going to put, you know, Russell Johnson for playing, who was famous for being in Gilligan's Island as the professor. I mean,
right.
He did a lot of movies too, but you're not going to put him in the Oscar thing. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So,
they did make an exception. I guess they weren't able to put Sarah Jones in during the presentation, but they made a little thing for her, like a tag on the bottom of the screen. Go to Oscar.com for a full list of those that we've lost this past year, and they had her picture and her name there.
That was nice.
Yeah, it was nice that they did that, yeah. But
I mean, I think that was a response, obviously, to the love that went out to that person. And
mm-hmm.
and a smart sort of way, because, you know, I mean, some people were criticizing the show for not including Alan Renee, who just passed away.
Well, he just died on Sunday. There's no way that you are going to do that. There's no way you could fix that.
People think, oh, why couldn't you just add him in? Like, that show has to be locked down, man. I mean, like, you can't just go back in there and add something in there. People don't understand that. So.
No. You have to render it. You have to do everything. I mean, there's so much work. There's no way you could have gotten that done in time. I mean, there's just no way.
You know what? They should explain that during the best editing segment. They should use the in memoriam.
That's a great idea.
That is. I mean, just say we cannot do this. I mean,
yeah,
that's a great idea. I think.
Hopefully,
you know,
he'll be in next year's. You know, that's the best you can hope for. I mean,
he'll still be done next year.
I'm trying to see here if there's anything that we haven't touched on. You know, by the way,
are
we
talking about Woody Allen again?
In memoriam segment. I love it that they did it with just the John Barry music.
Yeah.
Behind it, you know, the John Barry music from Somewhere in Time.
Yeah, that's right.
Is what they used. And I thought, wow, that's a classy choice. But then they minused it with Bette Midler coming out. So
yeah, I mean, they followed up Somewhere in Time with You're Wasting My Time. So
it's true, you know, and but what can you say?
Okay,
Before we close, tell me
your insanely early prediction for who will be a front runner for next year's Oscars in any category.
I knew you were going to say this. I knew
Inherent
you were going to go here.
Inherent Vice.
I was thinking that.
Inherent Vice.
Okay.
I think the front runner will not, even though I think it could be, Interstellar will not be going with Nolan. They'll go back down to five nominees and he won't get nominated.
Here's my prediction. Here's my prediction. I'm predicting someone to win, and I don't even know if this is the right category for this person to win. He might be a lead, but I'm putting him in supporting because I don't know yet. But Steve Carell for Foxcatcher.
That's a good one. Yeah,
I think he's definitely going to be nominated. So I mean, yeah. But
my words.
I don't know. Inherent Vice, you know, I mentioned Inherent Vice just because that's the movie I'm most looking forward to and everything.
Yeah.
But given how they reacted to The Master, maybe that won't happen.
It's got a bigger problem. It's got a bigger hurdle to overcome. You have to convince people it's not the prequel to The Big Lebowski. That's the thing you really need to do, because it is in many ways a story, even though it takes place in the 60s and goes through the 70s, you really have to convince people that the character Joaquin Phoenix is playing isn't just really another version of the dude.
and there's a lot of trying to keep people from thinking it's a ripoff or something like that. Or,
and it's
or
not,
whatever.
But there are people. I've seen people make this, and it is not. It's, you're not far off. It's not a stretch to say that. But you really, you're going with a guy whose work is, for the most part, has always been unfilmable. Thomas Pynchon is very hard to get into. This is actually one of the few novels that is actually, for a Thomas Pynchon novel, straightforward, if you can even use his name and straightforward in the same sentence. But, I mean, I do. I mean, I'm looking forward to December 12th. I'm looking very much forward to it. What do you think? What about Gone Girl? You think Gone Girl has a chance?
Oh yeah. Sure.
This is another Fincher, attaching himself to a blockbuster bestseller, and this will be his year finally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely. I haven't really looked at a lot of what's coming out this year. But those two are huge. So,
yeah, they're big.
And Nolan's movie too. So
yeah,
they're all huge, you know. So
it'd be funny if they came out with Interstellar and the next year they go back to 5 nominees. And great timing for Nolan. That's been another thing. go back to 5 nominees. Yeah, but okay.
Yeah, I think they should. I think they should. I mean, I won't talk about the Coppola thing until next week's show, but even Francis Ford Coppola tonight on our, when I saw Coppola tonight speak, he said, I don't understand why they have 10. They should just be 5, and it's all the influence of the Golden Globes, you know. That's what he thought. So
just tell me yes or no. Were you able to speak to him?
No, I wasn't able to speak to him. I was I got a card of ours to him through his handler, but it wasn't that kind of thing. It was very, very much a talk from him. He was very warm and wonderful, and I'll talk about it a lot next week on next week's show, on Sunday's show. But
we're not here on Sunday, I don't think.
Oh, no. We're not doing this next Sunday?
Not this coming Sunday, no.
Okay. Should I talk about it now?
No.
We'll talk about it when we come back.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay, guys. Have a good week.
All right. Have a good week, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. See you later.
Thank you. Have a great week.